You're listening to the AHDB podcast, practical know-how to help your farm business. Welcome to the AHDB podcast. I'm Miriam, and in today's episode, we're going to focus on environmental permitting for livestock production. We'll also take a quick look at the pig market with Bethan Wilkins, one of our analysts. Since 2007, the Environment Agency has regulated large intensive farming installations under the Environmental Permitting Regulations, also known as EPR, and formerly referred to as IPPC. And currently, there are 220 permitted pig farms in England. So to find out more on this topic, let's hear from the experts. Emma Slater from our Environment and Buildings team, and Mella Waite and Alison Frogley from the Environment Agency.
Okay, so if you rear pigs or poultry intensively in an installation with more than 40,000 poultry places, 2,000 pig places for pigs over 30 kilos, or 750 places for sows, then you'll need a permit. So some of you might be aware that DEFRA Clean Air Strategy has outlined future plans to also permit dairy farms and intensive pig units. So having said this, today we're just going to focus predominantly on what this means to pig producers in particular. So the latest best available technique reference document, which is also known as the BREF, was published in February 2017. And this document outlines various techniques to prevent and reduce emissions from pig and poultry farms. And the EA are currently in the process of reviewing all their permits that they have just to ensure that producers can meet these new standards within that four-year period. So the EA believe that the industry as a whole will be able to meet these standards by February 2021. So that's the 4 year time frame. And that's because the vast majority are being met at the moment. However, having said this, there are a few new requirements for existing permit holders, which will mean that they'll need to vary these permits. We caught up with Mella Waite and Alison Frogley, Environment and Business Senior Advisors from the EA, to find out a little bit more about the environment and permitting regulations and the changes being introduced. To start off, do you just want to give us an introduction on yourselves, a bit of background on the review and what you've been working on for the last couple of years?
Okay, hi. Well, I'm Alison Frogley and I work in the Environment Agency's National Agriculture Team. And I've been involved with the intensive farming sector for nearly 15 years now, I think, and was involved with bringing the sector into regulation way back in 2007 and producing much of the guidance. And I'm also the lead for the Environment Agency's Pig and Poultry Assurance Scheme.
Hi, I'm Mella Waite and I'm sector lead in the intensive farming sector in the agriculture team. I've been in the team for about a year and a half and I work mainly coordinating the sector group and dealing with any technical permitting issues that might come up, such as habitats problems, odour problems and trying to get consistency across the sector. More recently, as we'll discuss in the rest of this conversation, we've been dealing predominantly for the past year and a half or so on the new permitting review that's coming out. My background before I was in this team is in air quality, and I was intensive farming lead in the air quality team in the Environment Agency. And prior to that, I worked in consultancy for about 7 years.
Okay, right. Well, if I kick off with giving a bit more background, so the Environment Agency is the responsible regulator for the environmental permitting regulations, and the intensive farming sector was brought into these regulations in 2007, so 12 years ago now. There are separate regulations in force in Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, and they are regulated by different organisations. So these regulations apply an integrated approach to the regulation of certain industrial activities, and this includes larger pig and poultry farms. And as Emma's highlighted, this includes indoor pig keepers with more than 2,000 finishing pig places above 30 kilograms or 750 sow places. And the regulations also apply to farms with more than 40,000 poultry. And farms which exceed these thresholds, they're required to obtain an environmental permit from us, from the Environment Agency. So the regulations mean that we have to ensure operators apply what's called best available techniques, or BAT, or BAT, at the farm. And BAT means the available techniques which are best for preventing or minimising emissions and impacts on the environment. And the techniques part, that includes both the technology used and the way the installation is designed, built, maintained and also decommissioned. So the European Commission, they produce these what's called best available technique reference documents, or BREFs, and there also can be a separate BAT conclusions document. These documents, they're updated every so often, and then once they are then re-released, all regulators have to ensure that the permits comply with these new requirements within a four-year period. So the latest best available techniques reference document for pigs and poultry was published in 2017, and that means that we must now review all permits and ensure that all permit holders can meet the new standards within 4 years, so that's by February 2021, and we have a legal obligation to do this. So since BAT conclusions were published 2 years ago, we've been working to understand the implications of the new standards and how they can be implemented as simply and efficiently as possible for producers and also for the Environment Agency. And as many of you were probably aware, we were originally going to contact the farm operator of each farm and ask them to complete a questionnaire about whether they meet each of the BAT conclusions. But last year, we decided that we didn't need to do that and that we could use the existing information that we hold. So this is going to be much quicker and easier for everyone. So this has actually taken a bit of time to work through. But over the last few months, we've been checking every one of the 1,300 permits that we have and collating the information that we need for the review. So this work is nearly completed and we'll be starting to issue new variations in April. We've also worked with colleagues in Northern Ireland, Scotland and Wales to produce a document which presents our interpretation of the BAT conclusions and how farms are already meeting the majority of them. And this interpretation document, that's available online.
Okay, excellent. So in the introduction, I mentioned the new BREF, and that was published in 2017. Can you just summarise what the main changes are compared to what people were using before that date?
Okay, so it's Mela here. In the BAT conclusions, there's 34 different BAT conclusions, and they relate to all aspects of farm management and operations. So general farm management, noise and odour management, slurry storage management, and various different techniques to minimise dust and emissions, requirements for housing to minimise those emissions as well. We carried out a review of the new BAT conclusions for each category of farm, and we consulted with, we worked closely, as Alison mentioned, with the other regulators in Scotland, Northern Ireland and in Wales, and we also consulted with the trade associations. So looking at the 34 BAT conclusions, we believe as a whole the industry will be able to comply with all of them, in particular within the 4 year period. The vast majority of the conclusions, there's no change. People are already complying with them if they're complying with their existing permit. There's only a few additional requirements or standards that we need to meet and that we'll need to change in our permits. So we, because of this, we kind of looked at how we need to review our permits and issue new permits, and we decided that the whole process will be largely administrative. By comparison, in some of the other sectors we regulate, a lot of the time there might be new abatement technology or kind of significant changes that an industrial process might need to make. Big kind of overheads or costs or actual changes to processes. For our sector, there isn't any changes to operations. The main changes are just going to be reporting on some of the emissions. So the main changes are reporting on nutritional management and reporting on emissions to air. So for nutritional management, there was already a requirement that, that's looked at as part of your environmental permit, but the new additional element to it is that we're now requiring, or that the BAT conclusions require operators to report on the nitrogen and phosphorus emissions in the livestock excreta. When they're reporting these, they'll need to meet new standards that are set out in the BREF, and there's going to be a new condition that we'll put into all permits. So the trade associations have helpfully provided some tools to help with this, and looking at the initial data that we have, we anticipate that all operators will be able to comply with the standards that are set out in the BREF. The other requirement is reporting the emissions to air. So operators already used to do this by doing their pollution inventory return, but now it's a requirement that they do it, and we'll need to, again, add in additional condition in the permit for this. As well as just the requirement to report, there's also new standards that need to be compared with, and those are the BAT associated emission levels, or BAT AELs. So these two new monitoring reforms are the two new conditions that would be set out in the environmental permit. So there's a couple of other small things, and one of them is a new environmental management system. Again, operators already had different management systems included on in paper in their permit, or they're already required to do this. And then the new specific requirement is just that it's all pulled together in one statement, including things like a commitment from the operator to environmental management. So it's a subtle change. We won't be explicitly conditioning this in the permit themselves, but it will be things that will be picked up on during compliance checks, but we will be providing more detail to operators and what they need to do as we carry on with the review.
Okay, so there's a few new things that you've kind of mentioned there. What are your plans in terms of communicating this to the producers?
So we will, so what we have done during February is sent out an initial letter, and we've termed this our heads up letter. So it's giving all operators a bit of information saying the review is coming, this is why it's coming, and you will hear more in future. So that's just setting out the timescales, when we will be communicating with them again, so during the next year and a half. And it's detailing again just the main changes, those additional monitoring conditions and the requirement for an environmental management statement. Further down the line, we'll be providing operators with additional information through letters as well.
And will they be coming from the local officer?
Yeah, all of our local officers have been trained up, and they'll be communicating directly with the operators in their areas, and also operators can get in touch with their local officers with any questions.
Okay, so I'm a producer, I've received this letter, what do I do next?
From April onwards, we'll have worked through all of the information, we'll have collated the information centrally, and we're going to begin working our way through around 1,300 permits, that's how many we have, and we're going to start issuing the variations. So it will take, as I said, about 18 months to do this. So an operator won't hear from us again until they receive that letter from notification with their permit variation in it. So that could be any time in the next 18 months. It could be next month, or it could be in a year's time. For any of the new permits issued since 2017 or any recently varied permits, we're not going to need to issue a variation. They already have the conditions included in them, so they won't hear from us again. Operators shouldn't be too concerned or worry about this. There won't be any major changes, and they shouldn't be difficult to comply with. It's just the additional reporting requirements, but we will be sending out a bit more detail in their letter of notification on how they need to report and when they need to begin reporting. So although we'll be sending out the variation soon from now onwards, the requirement to begin reporting won't come in until February 2021, so that's a couple of years' time. And again, closer to that time, we'll be sending out more correspondence to operators just to tell them when and how to report, and hopefully giving them enough information so they can make the changes as easily as possible.
So for those that have applied for or varied permits since 2017, will they be required to make any changes?
So new permits or recently varied permits should already include the permit conditions that cover these new back conclusions. So their permit applications will already have been assessed against the new standards, so no further changes should be required. So these newly permitted, again, or recently varied permits, they won't need to have a further permit review. But newly permitted farms, they will need to meet the new standards from when that permit was issued, and that does include the new reporting requirements. And we'll be contacting these operators probably in the next few weeks to advise them on how they should report and also by when. But yeah, don't be too concerned about that. We will be in contact with those operators fairly soon.
So for those that have existing permits then, these will have to go through that variation process. How much is that going to cost?
So it's going to cost £380 for each permit variation. We implemented our revised charging scheme in April 2008, and that the objective is that to ensure that the Environment Agency covers our costs for all of the services that we provide, and that includes all of the permitting work, including when we ourselves need to initiate an agency-led variation. We did consult with the Trade Association when the new charges were coming out and we knew that the review was coming up, and we agreed to keep the variation charge at £380. That was our old variation cost prior to the review of charges. Ordinarily now, since the implementation of our new charging scheme, the cost for a standard variation like this would be £2,406. So we have kept it to as low as we possibly can. And equally, we've worked out our process that will minimise the workloads for us internally and kind of streamline it as much as possible and minimise the workload for our operators as well. So we're not going to ask you loads of questions about, or ask operators loads of questions about how they're going to comply. We're going to make a lot of assumptions and gather that information ourselves. And that helps, again, to keep the costs as low as possible.
Okay, and will producers receive that draft variation, or will they be required to provide you with any more information?
So yes, we will send producers a draft of their variation, and but we won't need to ask any further information from producers. We should already have that information that we hold. So hopefully, you know, they'll just get a draft of their variation. And what producers should do is they should check that the basic details, such as their name and address details, that they're correct. But the technical content of the permit, including the new permit conditions and the new schedules that are being added, they can't be changed. They're just being introduced across all permits. All varied permits will contain very similar conditions. So when a producer receives their draft permit, they should read it carefully and then let us know if they see anything which is incorrect, or indeed if they've got any concerns about. And like we said, we do expect that operators will continue to comply with their permit. But they should just read through the permit and the correspondence that we'll be sending that to go with that for additional information on the new requirements that we've outlined.
Okay, so if producers aren't compliant with the emission standards, will they be required to kind of upgrade their buildings or change any of their practices?
No, we're hoping that no one will need to do that. So the BAT conclusions say that you need to be compliant with the BAT ALs, and you can either do your own monitoring or you can demonstrate compliance using emission factors. And the problem that we've had is that the Environment Agency published some emission factors, but unfortunately they don't quite meet the BAT AELs. And we believe that this isn't because there's particularly high emissions from the pig sector in the UK, but it's because the studies on which those emission factors are based on are really old and out of date and don't really represent current practices, current pig genetics or nutritional practices. That some of the studies were carried out in the late 90s and early 2000s, and there wasn't a lot of studies, there was just a few done. So we've had some indicative new data through, and any of the more recent studies that we've done indicate that the emissions are compliant with the BAT AELs. So what we're doing is we're working closely with AHDB Pork on our national emission factors, and we're trying to get as much data as we can so we'll be able to update our emission factors and ensure that we've got values that are compliant with the BAT AELs. Everything that we've looked at to date is looking like we'll be able to do that, but we still need to just get all of the data through to ensure that is the case. We're kind of looking on some nutritional data, and we're also hopefully going to be getting some revised ammonia emissions monitoring data in the next year or so as well.
So you mentioned the producers will need to report these ammonia emission levels on an annual basis. Can you explain a little bit how they could do this and when they'll need to start reporting them?
Yeah, by all means. So we currently already ask operators to report their ammonia emissions through pollution inventory reporting, and that period is just closed. It's sort of, they tend to do that between January and February every year. So, but the new requirement also requires them to now report on dust. And that is actually new for pigs. Poultry already do that, but it is new for pigs. But we are hoping that we can fit this AEL reporting into the pollution inventory reporting in the future, because basically it is virtually the same information. So existing farms, they don't need to do that until February 2021, but because of the reporting periods, that probably actually is going to be in the following year afterwards. So there is a few years before existing producers will need to do that. And the system isn't quite ready for us to be able to do that reporting at the same time as the pollution inventory, but we're working towards doing that as soon as we can. But in the meantime, for newly permitted farms that already have the new permit conditions, they will need to report these emissions this year. And we will be sending further guidance out about this fairly soon. But also for newly permitted farms, as part of the permit variation, they should have received a process monitoring form with their permit, where they can put the results of the emissions in there. So, but the process in the future is going to be that a form will be submitted and then through to their local environment agency officer, so their local site officer. We're still sort of working through on this whole process, but yeah, expect to hear a bit more about from that on soon on that one.
That sounds good. So I think, Mella, you might have mentioned this, but AHDB has been doing some monitoring work over the last couple of years to update the emission factors. How does the EA intend to kind of use the results from this?
So we've got some of our existing results already, and we're hoping to get all of the new data that comes in from your monitoring studies, look at that and see if we can use it to just update our published emission factors. And hopefully it will give just a more modern representation of the sector and good results that we can use as factors going forward.
So covered quite a lot then. There's obviously some changes that are coming through. If any producer or anyone needs further guidance or assistance, or even if it's just more information to understand what this really means for their businesses, who should they get in touch with?
So producers should get in touch with their local site officer or environment officer. This should be the officer that sent them their initial information letter, hopefully in the last few weeks. But if they are unsure who this environment officer is, they can call our National Customer Contact Centre, and the phone number for that is 03708 506 506, and they'll be able to put them in contact with their local officer. Alternatively, Mel and myself, we're all also more than happy to answer any questions. As I mentioned earlier, we have released a guidance, or the interpretation guidance, on the back conclusions. And we've got a little web page on our consultations page, actually, where that can be downloaded. And that page also has the links to the back conclusions online. And it also has copies of the initial letter. And we'll also be using that little site to put additional information on as well.
Great. Well, thank you both. It's been great to kind of catch up with you both today, and hopefully we've addressed quite a lot of the questions that our listeners might have had on this area. For anyone who'd like to know a little bit more about this topic, we also have a webinar recording on the AHDB website, which kind of talks through the background, ways to report ammonia emission levels, and also some of the practical examples of what can be implemented to meet these new limits. If you're new to permitting, we also have some template documents available on our website, which you can use as part of your permit application. And we'll just pop the links to these in today's show notes. So for any further questions, you can speak to your local EA officer, as Alison has mentioned, or also contact one of the environment and buildings team here at AHDB.
Hopefully today's interview has shed some light on the environmental permitting regulations and the changes that are coming into force. You can find some useful links and contact details in today's show notes. We're now going to hear from Bethan Wilkins, one of our analysts. Bethan gives a monthly update on the pig market through our Pork Talk videos, which you can find on the Pork YouTube channel. Last month she talks about whether there were signs that tougher times might be about to ease. This month we'll see how the situation has developed.
Hello and welcome to the April edition of Pork Talk. Last month we discussed whether there were signs these tougher times might be about to ease. Let's see how this situation has developed since then. The SPP has now moved up very slightly for two consecutive weeks, the first positive movement since July last year. However, there is still a way to go until prices move back above average production costs. For the final quarter of 2018, estimated GB finished pig production costs were at 156 pence per kilogram. Nonetheless, there are signs that this upward momentum could continue. European pig prices have been moving up since early February, though volatility in the pound has softened this effect in sterling terms. The gap between the UK and EU average reference prices has still managed to fall a little over the past month, though, to 20 pence per kilogram. Further positive signs come from retail sales, with recent reports from Kantar World Panel indicating fresh pork sales increased in the latest 12-week period ending 24th of February. Although the continuing poor performance from bacon mitigates any positive impact of this. Look out for detailed analysis of this on the AHDB Port website. From an export perspective, sales were also good in the early part of the year. During January, UK pigmeat exports increased 11% compared to last year, and average prices were higher. Exports to China in particular increased over 50%, and there remains significant potential for growth into this market as the year progresses. The African swine fever situation remains serious there. Although prohibitive tariffs continue to disadvantage product from the US, the US lean hog futures market soared in March, reflecting expectations that increasing volumes of US product will be required regardless. So overall, there remains some positive signs for the British pork market over the coming months, though much depends on developments with African swine fever and, of course, Brexit. Keeping up to date on developments is always important, and analysis that is more recent is available on the prices and stats section of the AHDB Port website.
Visit ahdb.org.uk for all the latest news, research and information, and follow us on Twitter at the AHDB to stay up to date. That's all for today. The next Port podcast will be released in a month's time. But in the meantime, you can hear from the other sectors at AHDB as we'll be releasing new episodes every week. The next episode will be the first in a four-part series looking at what's next for horticulture growers when investing in robotics. We'll hear from Andrei Ivanov from Tiptree and Dr. Vishu Mohan from the University of Essex, who will be discussing their collaboration for developing a robotic strawberry harvester. Andrei will explain how he got involved with the university, and Dr. Mohan will be discussing whether robotics is the future for horticulture. If you don't want to miss an episode, make sure you subscribe, and if there are any topics you would particularly like to hear about, do get in touch.